Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Chof Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof Gimel. We open with a quote from the Mishnah, Al Hachararo Mishalem Nezek Shalem, and we're reading the continuation of the Mishnah from that which we've written between the lines, and V'al HaGodesh Mishalem Chatzi Nezek. We, of course, discussed the circumstances of this quote in our previous shiurim. So we are once again dealing with the dog eating the loaf, and concerning that, the Mishnah says he pays full damages, and for the burning of the goddish, of the pile of grain, he pays half damages. The Gemara asks, Man Chayev, who is obligated to pay, to compensate for the damages? Answer, Baal Kelev, the owner of the dog. The dog itself ate the loaf, and the dog had brought the loaf with live coals to it to the pile of grain. So the owner of the dog is liable. Question, V'lechayev nami baal gacheles, why do we not impose obligation to compensate upon the owner of the coals? Answer, B'sheshimer gachaloso. The owner of the coals, got stuck to the bread, he had actually protected or guarded the coals. The Gemara asks, E b'sheshimer gachaloso, if he guarded the coals, my boy kelev hosom, so how did the dog get to it? Answer, B'shechosar. The dog dug under the fence and thereby got to the coals. So as far as the owner of the coals, he provided sufficient protection. However, the dog burrowed or dug under the fence and that way got to the coals. Omar Rav Mori Brei Rav Kahana Zos Omeris. This shows us that in the Mishnah we see that the owner of the dog pays full damages concerning for the loaf that the dog ate. And as we pointed out, that loaf had live coals attached to it. The full payment that the owner of the dog must make shows us Stam Delosis Chasurois Hein Eitzel Kelev, that your average door or your average fence is not impervious to dogs digging under them. The point that we get from this is that it's that all of this is within the realm of normal behavior, and it's not considered an unusual act for a dog to dig under a fence. And had it been unusual, then the payment rate would have been chatzi nezek, half damages. But the Mishnah says full damages are made, thereby showing us that all of this is within the realm of normal behavior. The Gemara asks, De ochla hecha, where did the dog eat the loaf? The double underline that you see here indicates their shlavim, their stages, in order to finally arrive at an answer to this question. So the question once again is, where did the dog eat the loaf? That he ate the loaf by some third party's pile of grain. Well, if that's the case, the owner of the dog would not be obligated to pay for the loaf. Ha'bo'inon, we require, in order for there to be financial guilt, financial obligation, ubir b'stei acher v'leka. And the understanding of that pasuk is that the eating was done in the property of the victim, of the one who suffered the loss. So, as far as where did the dog eat the loaf, it could not have been by the godish, by the pile of grain owned by a third party. Lo tzricha. So we say, no, it's necessary to teach the din of the Mishnah, the payment nezek sholem for the loaf. The ochla begodish de baal charora. He ate it by the heap of grains that was also owned by the same person that owned the loaf. And with that explanation, we have fulfilled the Torah expectation or requirement of ubir b'stei acher. The consumption, the chiyuv of shein, the chiyuv for paying for eating losses that the animal caused, must be in the domain of that, in the domain belonging to the one who owned the food item consumed. The Gemara continues with a suggestion. Tifshot. Let us conclude the pi para, the mouth of the cow. In this, we were talking about a dog till now, but the cow example applies equally. The cow represents the mazik, the one doing the damage, the one who is causing a loss through eating. So shall we conclude that pi para, the mouth of the animal eating, kechotzer hanizik domi, it has the status of the courtyard, the domain of the victim. De'i kechotzer hamazik domi, if we were to view the mouth of the offending animal as chotzer hamazik, the domain of the damager, lema le, then let the owner of the animal who we're turning to for compensation, let him argue back and say, my boy riftoch bepuma de kaboy, what's your loaf doing in my dog's mouth? So from the fact that the owner of the dog, the owner of the cow, can't say that, as a means of exonerating himself from payment, we must conclude, therefore, that the mouth of the offending animal has the status of the domain of the victim. Now, this sounds a little academic, maybe, but the Gemara says this is an issue that was brought up for analysis. The Ibayalu, it was asked, pi para, the mouth of the cow who is, once again, the mazik, the one that's eating. Kechotzer anizik domi, oy kechotzer hamazik domi, do we view it as the domain of the victim or the domain of the offender? You notice we have a bracketed section. We have a starred note in the margin that reads as follows. So Graham Lashane Dilug. These brackets are for an initial skipping. Habasis Legisha Shalanu Timsabarashi Ramaso V Amris. The basis for our marking and, let's say, structure sensitivity, you can find in the Rashi with the Dibor Masel V'i Amris. Acharei Hasograyim, there is a Toshma. After the brackets, the Gemara introduces Toshma, which is HaGemara Tenase Lifshot Sheiloseinu. At that point, the Gemara tries to resolve the question, E.P. Porav Nechshav Kechotzer HaNizik O Kechotzer HaMazik. Is the mouth of the offending animal considered as the domain of the victim or the domain of the offender? Besochasograyim, within the bracketed section, Hagemara boichenes, the Gemara evaluates, Haim yesh bichlal tzad lomar kechotzer hamazik? Is there even a possibility, even a chance of suggesting chotzer hamazik? In other words, the Gemara raises this analysis. In other words, that there are two sides of how to look at the mouth of the parah, and within the brackets, the Gemara raises a question saying, how can you even suggest the mouth of the mazik? And we will then have to give an answer. But after the brackets, when the Gemara continues with the Toshma, those triangles are featured, by the way, on the side of our Gemara under the Mivneh heading, where the triangles are explained as Nisyonos Lifshot Shelosenu, attempts to answer our question, how do we consider Pi Parah, Velomar, Kechotzer Nizik? These are attempts in the direction of showing that it's considered Chotzer HaNizik. The dashed underlining that will follow highlights the expression Ve'i Amris Kechotzer HaMazik Domi, if you were to think otherwise, to think that it's Chotzer HaMazik, so then things wouldn't work out. The inverted triangle that you see in the course of this discussion represents Dechia, a rejection of whatever point we were trying to prove. I hope that the general Gemara structure is somewhat clear. With everything that we've said so far, we can now go back to the Gemara four lines from the top where you see the bracketed section, and recognizing that the question itself will be dealt with how to resolve it, Chotzer Nizik, Chotzer Mazik, after the brackets. We continue now in the brackets, four lines from the top. Ve'i amris kechotzer hamazik domi. If you are going to raise as a possibility that the mouth of the offending animal is considered chotzer hamazik, and we already know from the discussion just before that shame, the obligation for compensating for your animals eating someone else's food, that is called shame, and the obligation for paying is only when the eating took place in the chotzer hanizik, in the domain of the victim. If you're going to even suggest that the mouth of the animal is chotzer hamazik, then shein dechayev rachmona hechi mishkachas lot. How can you have guilt for shein, which the Torah acknowledges that one has to compensate when his animal eats someone else's foodstuff? Well, how can you offer compensation if the mouth is considered chotzer hamazik? Omar Rav Mori Brei Dravkana Kagon. We'll give you now an example of the damage that's labeled as shein. But as we've said so many times since the beginning of this Masichta, a major pitfall for those who are locked into the translation method of learning is the translation of shein would not enable one to envision what the damage of shame really is. In reality, shame represents a type of damage an animal creates, giving the animal physical pleasure. The most common situation would be the animal eating, the pleasure of eating and achieving satisfaction. But there are other body pleasures that an animal can achieve in the course of destroying someone else's property. Our goal then is to demonstrate how you can have the animal violating shein without having to say that the mouth is necessarily chotzer ha-nizik. The mouth might be very well chotzer hamazik, and you'll ask, so then how do you have shein being a source of payment in the Torah? The Gemara answers, Rav Mori says, Kagon, Shenishachicho b'koysa lanosa, or v'kinfo peros lanosa. An animal rubbed into a wall and damage resulted. The Gemara will get a bit more detailed in a moment, but in the course of rubbing on the wall, scratching itself, relieving itself from some type of pain or discomfort, so the animal achieved physical comfort without our having to limit ourselves to food in its mouth. So for as far as Shane, that if you were to say that the mouth is considered chotzer amazik, there still would be grounds for the damage called Shane in the event that the animal rubbed against a wall, or the animal soiled someone else's fruits. Rashi says on the first narrow line, tinfo peros ayidei gilgul. Animals are prone to roll around on the ground, roll around on things. Ke'ein shoysen susim chamorim belaz, and he gives you a French word. So the animal destroyed someone's fruits, giving the animal pleasure in the course of its rolling around on the fruits. And it's classified as shame, but you're not limiting yourself to destruction through the animal's mouth. The Gemara continues, though. Maskiflo Marzutra. Marzutra asks, how can Nishacha B'Kaisel or Tinfo Peros be culpable? Vabino, do we not require, as the Pasuk says, Kasher Yevayer HaGolol Adumo Veleka? Now, from that Pasuk that we've seen earlier in our Masechta, the destruction of Shane must be Adumo, meaning a form of complete destruction. Rashi, on the upper part of the narrow line, says, V'ho bo'inon adtumo, de mechalya karnam. Kalya, like the word vayechulu, is to finish something off. Karnam means the principal value, that nothing is left. De'ho ubi'er, zashen, the word ubi'er that we have learned, the Pasuk said, ubi'er b'steacher, that's a reference to the mazik, the damage known as shein, and the word ubi'er is clarified, mi yivayer hagolat tumon afgalon, b'perekamo. How do we explain the Torah Pasuk, the Torah verse of ubi'er b'steacher? By looking at this other biblical verse, yivayer hagolat tumo, from which we are able to define ubi'er as being shein. And in the pasuk of Yevayer Agolo, it also ad tumo means complete destruction. In the examples that you gave, examples 1 and 2 that Rav Mori gave, where you don't have total destruction, the wall is still there, the fruits that the animal rolled around on are still there. The Gemara answers, and we have numbers that correspond to the numbers we just saw before. So Ravina deals with the issue of the wall. How do you have, where do you see complete destruction by animal rubbing in wall? Ravina Omar Deshof Tzalmi. The wall in question had different carvings on it, some decorative elements. And when the animal rubbed on the wall, it eroded, it wiped out those decorative elements that were on the wall. So regarding the destruction of those different carvings that were on the wall, they no longer exist. So you have a fulfillment of tumo, complete destruction. Number two, this is Rav Ashi, relates to the issue of the fruits. Rav Ashi Omar, the pasi psui. Rashi says, the pasi psui, kishinis galgilo al haperos, when the animal rolled on the fruits, tachvoson betit, the fruits became coated in mud, v'efsher lulakton, and they were wedged into the mud in such a way that you couldn't pick out the fruits anymore. So the examples we gave of Shane, the examples of 1 and 2 rubbing in the wall, rolling on fruits, would be fair examples of Shane, where there is complete destruction. And at the same time, we're not saying that we're not binding ourselves to the mouth of the animal as necessarily being chotzer hanizik. The mouth could very well be chotzer hamazik, and for eating in the standard form eating of other people's produce, the Torah might not necessarily hold the owner of the animal responsible. Well, if the animal's not responsible for standard form eating, so how do you have Shane? We answered rubbing in the wall that had carvings on it, or rolling around on fruits, this thereby making the fruits inaccessible. The question then remains. In other words, we can still say that at this point, it's 50-50. How do you look at the animal's mouth? Do you look at it as chotzer hanizik, or do you look at it as chotzer hamazik? Ta shma. So attempt number one. We're going to try to show you that the mouth of the animal is considered chotzer hanizik. And we're going to quote from a Mishnah later on that says, Shisa bo es hakelev. Shisa bo es hanachosh. Potter. Shisa means incited. One incited a dog to attack. Or one enraged or incited a snake to attack. And the source rules that there is exemption. No need to compensate for damages. Man potter, who is exempt? Potter mishase, v'chayev baal kelev. The one who incite, the inciter, is exempt. He didn't do the actual damage. He merely caused damage to take place. That's called groma benezikin, causing of damage. And halacha views that kind of behavior, of course, in a negative light, but not a sufficient level of damage to warrant the inciter to be guilty. He's a causative factor, but not the actual damager. However, the owner of the animals in question, the owner of these animals, the owner is obligated to compensate. Ve'i amris kechotzer hamazik domi, if you were to rule or answer our question above that the mouth of these creatures is considered chotzer hamazik, well then the owner of the animal would have a strong argument to exempt or exonerate himself. Let the owner of the animal say, "My boy, yodoch bepume de cowboy, what's your arm doing in my dog's mouth? My dog, its mouth is my domain. It's chotzer hamazik. What in the world is your arm doing in my domain?" That would, of course, if such an argument could be advanced, that would be grounds for exempting the owner of the animal. Yet we concluded that the owner of the animal is chayev. That shows us that the mouth is not considered the offender's domain. The Gemara says, Ema, as far as the source is concerned, say thusly, Potur af mishase. There is exemption even for the one inciting. Now, if you say it that way, there is exemption for the owner of the animal, and there's exemption even for the inciter. So why is that? Why is there exemption for the owner of the animal? Because the animal's mouth is considered chotzer hamazik, and in order for there to be culpability, it would have to be in the domain of the victim. V'iboyaseimo. Another explanation is that the mouth of the animal, the inside of the mouth of these animals, is in fact chotzer hamazik. If that's the case, why is the owner of the creature guilty? Because the damage did not take place within the confines of the animal's mouth. Rather, the afke lenive visarte, the teeth were exposed, and with the, we'll say, the teeth exposed beyond the confines of the animal's lips, if you will, the animal caused damage through, we'll say, through scratching or puncturing with the teeth outside the mouth, and as such, the hand was not inside the animal's mouth. But had the victim's hand been inside the animal's mouth, then the owner could have said, as we said above, "What's your hand doing in my domain?" Ta shma. So that attempt, number one, being unsuccessful, we haven't resolved with any degree of definitiveness what the status of the mouth is. We continue tosh with a second approach, a second attempt. Toshma hishich bo es hanochosh. Hishich, from the word noshach, is to bite. So someone caused a snake to bite and injure its victim. Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev, Rechomim Potrin. Rabbi Yehuda says that that snake that bit and killed someone. Rashi, if we read Rashi across the mirror, hishich bo es anochosh, shenotas anochosh biyado, v'igia piv liad chavero, ad she nichnesa l'soichoy, v'noshchoy umeis. A man took a venomous snake and put it on the hand of a victim, and to the point that the snake bit the victim and he died. The person died. Rabbi Yehuda says that the one who brought the snake to the victim is chayev. Rashi, I should say, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev, and Rashi says mechayev misa, and the chachamim potrim. The chachamim say no misa. Misa is death penalty. V'yomar Rav Acha bar Yankiv, kishetimtze lomar ledivrei Yehuda, when you analyze the opinion of Rav Yehuda that said that the owner of that snake who brought his snake to someone and caused the other fellow's death, and we say that that owner is chayev misa, we must conclude eres nochosh bein shinav hu omeid. The venom that causes death is already there at the tip of the fangs of the snake. In other words, it's already there. It's not something that the snake injects from some internal location, but rather the venom is bein shinov. It's already there between its teeth. It's between its fangs. Lefikach, and as a result, makish besayef. Makish is the person that brought the snake to the victim's arm. So he is besayef. He's liable to the death penalty at the sword, by the sword, the sayef. That's the penalty for killing someone. V'nochosh poter, the snake, it's exempt. The snake, we will not do anything to the snake. The snake is not viewed as being responsible for the death of the person. However, ledivrei chachamim, in the Tanaic source, we saw that the chachamim hold that the one that was mashich, the nochosh, is exempt, is free from a capital penalty. So the chachamim hold eres nochosh me'atzmo meki. The venom which kills the person is something that the snake itself injects. That's the snake is the causes the force that enables the venom to exit itself and enter the victim's body. Lefikach, because of that analysis, nochash beskila, the snake is to be stoned, in accordance with the law concerning any animal that kills a person. The verse says, "Hashor yisokel the ox." If the ox kills someone, gored someone to death, the ox is stoned, is killed. So, being that the snake is proactive, according to the Chachamim, the snake is beskila, is stoned. Umakish poter, the one who brought the snake to the victim's hand, he is exempt. Ve'i amris pi pora kechotzer hamazik domi, if that was the way to analyze things, that the mouth of the offending creature, the mouth is considered the domain of the mazik, why would someone say the nochash is beskila? Let the owner of the snake say, "My boy Yodach befuma dechivoy, what's your hand doing in my snake's mouth?" The Gemara says, rejects that. You can see the inverted triangle. The Inyan Katla, regarding the issue of the killing of the snake, Lo Amrinon, we would not attempt to save the snake on these grounds. What's your hand doing in my animal's mouth? In other words, it could very well be that the pi pora is chotzer hamazik. That is not going to be a sufficient reason for sparing the life of an animal that kills someone. Umino Tamra, from where do we know that point? That when it comes to the life of the animal responsible for someone's death, we will not spare it, the animal, from stoning. Tisanyo, here we have a long answer. Hanichnas lechotzer balabayas shelo bishus. A person enters someone's private domain without permission. And the ox of that private domain, the ox owned by the owner of the private domain, killed the intruder, killed the one who entered without permission. Hashor beskila, the animal that killed is to be stoned by limpturim and akofer. The owner, the homeowner, is exempt from kofar. Kofar is a financial payment made when someone's animal kills a person. The Gemara explains, "Bailim turmina kofar maitaimo." Why do we say that the owner of the animal does not have to pay kofar, the payment made when an animal kills someone? Why is he exempt? Maitaimo diomale birshusi my boys. What are you doing in my domain? You entered my domain without permission. And that you met up with your death in my domain after intruding without permission? I'm not going to be held responsible to pay. Well, Shoro Nami Lemole, my boy is producing. Regarding the animal, we said that the animal is killed. Why? Why should the animal be stoned? Couldn't the same argument be used? What business did you have coming into my domain? So as we said before, with regard to the killing of the animal, once an animal kills a human being, whether rightfully so or not, we kill the animal. So that, as far as our discussion is concerned, we had two attempts to show that pi pora is considered chotzer nizik, but each one of these attempts, you can see, was rejected. So that we don't have something conclusive regarding P. Pora. Hano Izi de Beit Tarbu. Beit Tarbu is the name of a family. There were goats owned by this family, Beit Tarbu, the Havu Mafsidi Lei, the Rav Yosef. These goats were causing a loss to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef had produce, food, whatever, and these goats were consuming it. Amarle l'Abaye. Rav Yosef says to Abaye, Zil Eimolahu l'Marayu, go tell their owners, Delitz Ne'inhu, that they should put them under guard. Litzner literally means hide them away. Omar Lay. Abaye said, Amai Ezel, why should I go and tell them that? De'i Azilna Amri Li, if I go and tell them that they should restrain their goats, they will tell me, Ligdamor Gdeira Bare, that you should build a fence in your property, fencing out the goats. In other words, they will throw the burden on you. So there's no point in my going to tell them when they have this prepared response. The Gemara asks, Ve'i Godar, if Rav Yosef, if we'll say the victim, were to put up a fence, thereby keeping the animals out. Shein dechayev rachmona hechi mishkachas law. Where would you then ever have the damage known as the damage of shein? Answer, kishechosra. If the animal dug under the fence. Inami, another possibility, is the nofil guda balela. The wall fell down at night, whereby we can't expect the victim to have rebuilt it. It fell down at night, and in the meantime, the animals came and ate the fruits. So under those circumstances, we will say shein is chayev. But otherwise, if you have animals that are not under guard, it's the obligation of the victim to fence off his property. That is basically what was the result of Abaye's response to Rav Yosef. We are not going to say that is necessarily the final halachic ruling. Tosfos points out that Abaye simply didn't want to go. So he said what he did, but not that necessarily is the final ruling. And what we're pointing out now, you can look at on your own in the Tosfos Dibur Masel Yachli Lemeimar, about halfway down the page. Machriz Rav Yosef Itemo Rabo. Rav Yosef, in some versions, have Rabo announced. Desalkin Leila Udenachten Letachto. Those that are Salkin Leila means that are literally they're going up. They're going from Bavel to Eretz Israel. And those descending from Eretz Israel to Bavel, be knowledgeable concerning this din. Hani Izi Deshuka de Mafsidi. Izi Deshuka are goats that are destined to be slaughtered for their meat. These goats are kept around until market day when people come to buy their foodstuffs. So we have Izi Deshuka, the goats waiting for slaughter, and in the meantime, the Mafsidi, they cause loss. Masrinon b'mrayel treyotos zimnin. We warn their owners 2 or 3 times. Keep your animals under guard. And this, of course, is Rav Yosef's approach. We saw in the little incident before. You have to keep your animals under guard. Eat sayasayas. If they listen, if they're cooperative, great. Ve'ilo, if they are incooperative, they don't watch their animals. Amrin le, then we will say to these goat owners that were hoping to fetch a good price by having their animals slaughtered on market day, we say to them, you're not watching your goats. Tiv amas chosu v'kabel zuzach. Go right now to where the animals are to be slaughtered, even though it's not market day, and sell your meat, get whatever you can. Kabel zuzach means get your cash, even if it's not market day. And tough luck. On market day, it would have been much easier to sell the meat and I would assume get a good price for it. But since you're not watching your animals, you've got to slaughter them now. We're not going to let you wait any longer till market day. And whatever financial loss you are going to suffer, so be it. You're not watching your animals. We approach now a new Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Machloikis Tanoim, we'll see a Tanaic disagreement. In Begimel Negichos, Beyom Echod Niamuad, if in the course of three gorings on one day, does an animal become a Shor Hamuad? U Mekorosam, and in the course of the Gemara, we'll see their sources. The Gemara, the Mishnah. Ezu tam ve'ezu mud, what is known as a tam, and what is a mud? Bear in mind, and I'm sure it's obvious to everyone, tam is damage that will result in half payment of half damages. Mud represents an animal that's prone to causing damage, and as such, he'll pay full damage. When you see the term tam, you are inevitably going to associate it with an animal that gores with its horns. It gores, I say with its horns, but we have to expand the definition as we always do in learning Bava Kamma. Damage that the animal causes through unusual behavior with an intention to cause damage. So, Muad, the Mishnah says, Kol Sheridu Bo Shlosha Yomim. Any animal that there had been testimony concerning its doing damage on three separate days. The Tam, how does an animal become a Tam? Mishiyachzor bo shlosha yomim, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. An animal that had been a mu'ad, can it regain tam status? Yes. 3 days go by and it does not gore. In other words, the animal over the course of 3 days sees other oxen and it doesn't gore. That shows us that the animal resumed its original tam status. And as we've said, when an animal has a tam status, the damage that it does through goring would result in merely half damages. Rabbi Meir Omer, Muad, what is meant by Muad? Sha'idu bo shlosha pelmim. There was testimony concerning its damage three times. Testimony of having caused damage three times, even if the three testimonies are on one day. V'tam, kol shu atinoikis mimashmashin bovena nogeach. Tam would be an animal that can be handled or petted by children, and it does not gore. My taima de Rabbi Yehuda. What is the scriptural basis for Rabbi Yehuda? Now, Rabbi Yehuda said that an animal becomes a muad if there is testimony concerning its goring on three separate days. Omar Abaye. Abaye quotes the pasuk Shmos Perachov al pasuk Lamed Vav. We should note on the side, we have the pasuk quoted in full, and it reads as follows: O noda ki shor nagahu mitmoyul shilshaim v'lo yishmerenu bolov shalei mishalei shor tachas hashor v'ames yeloi. The pasuk describes a shor that has become known as a goring type shor. Mitmol shilshom. Mitmol literally means from yesterday, shilshom the day before, and the owner didn't watch it. A full payment must be made. Let's turn back to the Gemara. We ask, what's the basis for Behuda? Rabbiuda was the one that made reference to testimony concerning three separate days to the exclusion of a case of three gorings on one day. So the scriptural reference is Amar Abaye, Tmoil Chad, Mitmoil Trey. In the Pasuk you saw the word Mitmol, but we're able to darshan to explain or to break the word down into its root. Tmoil indicates one day. The mem of the attached to that word equals trey, a second day. Shilshom, also in the pasuk, tlosa. V'lo yishmer nubalov, ason l'negicho revias. The phrase that appeared in the pasuk, indicating and the owner didn't watch the animal, that's a reference to the fourth goring. At that point, if it gores a fourth time, full damages will be paid. Rava Omar. Tmoil mitmoil chad. Rava doesn't see any significance in the mem. So, from the word mitmoil, that's a reference to one day. Shilshom equals trey. The lo yishmerenu, that posuk, ho'idna, the owner didn't watch it now. Chayav, the owner. If it gores, according to Rashi, if it gores a third goring, full damages must be made. So as far as Rashi's approach to Abaye and Rava, according to Abaye, full damages would be made for the fourth goring. According to Rava, the full damage payment is made already at the third goring. And we emphasize this is Rashi's approach. The Rebbe Meir Maitaima. Rebbe Meir said that the three gorings that would make an animal into a mu'ad, says even if the three gorings took place on one day, what's the reason for that? What's the basis? Desanya, the following Brisa will reveal the source. Omar Rebbe Meir. And we continue at the top of Daf Chof Dalid. Rebbe Meir says, Richek Negichosav Chayov. Hirev Negichosav Lo Kol Shekein. If an animal, by goring on three separate days, gains Muad status, then all the more so if it gores three gorings on one day. Omru Leh. The Rabbanon responded. The Rabbanon said that three gorings on one day will not result in it becoming a mu'ad. They cite an unrelated area of halacha, but as precedent to make their point. They say, Zava tochiach. A Zava is a woman experiencing a certain type of blood flow. A female-related blood flow. Sherichako riosel tamea. Kirva riosel Torah. A woman will achieve Zava status. Zava status means that at a certain point, after a certain number of sightings, she will then have to observe 7 days of non-blood sighting, 7 clean days. At the conclusion of which, she brings sacrifices to the Beis HaMikdash. The rule concerning the Zava is, if she sees three blood emissions on three consecutive days, she then becomes a Zava. If she sees several sightings, three sightings on one day, in other words, they're much closer time-wise to one another, she does not become a Zava. So the Rabbanon, in citing the Halach of Zava, refute the claim made by Rebbe Meir by showing that only when things are, let's say, spread out three successive days would she become a Zava. But if they are more rapid, more appearing three sightings that bring on one day, she does not become Tameah. She doesn't become defiled in the full sense of the word. There are many more details, but we're not going to get into them now. So with that, the Rabbanon are saying the Shor HaMuad will become a Muad only if the three gorings on three separate days, not if the three take place on one day. Omar Lohen, Rabbi Meir, responds, Hare hu oimer, v'zois tia tumosoi b'zoivoi. Rabbi Meir, before we get into the details of what he says, let's point out, Rabbi Meir says, you cannot cite the case of Zava as a refutation to my position. The case of the Zava is governed by scripture. We call Gzeiras HaKosuv. It's a divine ruling. And hence, the laws that we describe concerning the Zava are limited to that realm, to the realm of Zava. It cannot serve as a precedent for other areas of law. So, Rabbi Meir is saying, as a result of the Gzeiras HaKosuv, we will not make the Kal Vachomer that I am making regarding the goring ox. What's the Gzeiras HaKosuv? So it says, V'zos tia tumasoi b'zoivoi. The Pasuk is describing an emission, and it's referring to a male who experiences male-related body emissions. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Pasuk. It says in Vayuka Perek Tazvav Pasuk Gimel, the Pasuk refers to male sightings of emissions called Zov. And it says in the Pasuk, first we're going to read the Pasuk together, as it appears in the margin. V'zois tia tumasoi b'zoivoi, ror b'soro ezovo, ohechtim b'soro mizovo, tumasoi hi. We turn back to the Gemara text, four lines from the top. Rabbi Meir says, as far as emissions are concerned, there's a Pasuk that says, V'zois tia tumasoi b'zoivoi, tolo hakosuv es hazav, Bireios. A male and his possible defilement is dependent exclusively on sightings. Number of sightings. Three sightings. In the pasuk that we read, you saw the word Zovo three times. So as far as a male is concerned, three sightings, whether they be on three consecutive days or even three on one day, the male that experienced that becomes defiled. And the Pasuk is telling us that only the male is dependent exclusively on sightings, to the exclusion of the female. Ves hazova b'yomim. The female who experiences female blood emissions, her defilement is dependent on days, only if she experienced it on three successive days, not three on one day. The idea of three sightings on one day would have defiling power with regard to a male, not the female. The Gemara asks, "Mimai dahai vizos?" The word vizos that we saw in the pasuk two lines above is a limitation expression. It excludes certain things. So, in our reading of the Tanaic source, we saw that Vizos excluded the female from becoming defiled through multiple sightings on one day. Who is to say that that is the way to approach things? The Gemara asks, Mimai dahai v'zos limute zava meri'ios. Who is to say that the limitation, the point of limitation, is to exclude the female from multiple sightings on one day? Ema, maybe limute zav miyomim. Maybe the purpose of v'zos, the limitation, is to exclude a male, from sightings, from, let's say, defilement, if the sightings take place on three consecutive days. And we know otherwise. We know that a male will become defiled if his three sightings are, in fact, on three consecutive days. Well, how do we know that? Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, V'hazov es zoivoy la zochor v'la nekeva. Makish zochor l'nekeva. The Torah compares male to the female. Ma nekeva b'yomim. Just like the female becomes defiled because of female blood sightings on three consecutive days. And there's a scriptural reference to teach us that. So av zochor b'yomim. So to the male will become defiled through successive days, three consecutive days. So with that in mind, I see that the suggestion to exclude a male from successive days is not true. The male will become defiled, whether it's three sightings on one day or three zov sightings on three successive days. Question. The lakish nekeva lazochar. Once you're telling me from the posuk vazoiva zoiva lazochar nekeva, I compare the male to the female, why not the other way as well? Compare the female to the male. Ma zochar birios, just like a male becomes defiled with multiple sightings on one day, af nekeva birios, so too the female, three blood sightings on one day would make her into a zava. No, we can't say that though. Ha mi'et rachmona vizos. But the Torah already excluded the female from multiple sightings on one day. Only the male has that feature. Question. Uma rois. What is it that makes it so clear to you to say that we're memayet, that we exclude the female from sightings and not the male from successive days? In other words, we're saying that a female that has multiple sightings, three sightings of blood on one day, will not become a zava gedola. She won't become a full-fledged zava. A male, however, that has three sightings on three successive days will become a zov, a defiled male. The Gemara answers. Mistabra koi birios memayet rios. It's most likely that if you're involved with a pasuk that deals with sightings as opposed to days, multiple sightings on one day, that's the pasuk that we cited earlier in the margin, the pasuk of Vezos. That pasuk is dealing with sightings. No reference is made to days there. So if you're in a pasuk dealing with sightings and you see a limitation, so I understand that the pasuk which says a male, because of multiple sightings, becomes tameh, I am thereby going to exclude the female from defilement through multiple sightings on one day. In other words, you're in the topic of multiple sightings on one day with a limitation, so I'm going to be limiting, I'm going to be excluding the female from the issue of defilement through multiple sightings on one day. However, to suggest koi b'riyos memayit yomim, to suggest that in a pasuk dealing with sightings, I'm going to exclude someone, i.e. the male, from defilement on three successive days, it's apples and oranges. If you're in the topic of sightings, it wouldn't make any sense that a limitation there is limiting someone from a separate topic, if you will, from Yomim. Tonu Rabbonan. We have a Tanaic source, and on the side of the Gemara, we'll see that following this Tanaic source, the Gemara is involved with Halacha Kemi Be'inyin Ma'u Mu'ad U'ma'u Tam. The Halacha follows whom regarding what is considered a Mu'ad and what is considered a Tam. So now the Gemara, Tonu Rabbonan, Ezu Mu'ad, what would be considered a Mu'ad, an animal that's considered prone to goring, Kol She'idu Bo Shlosha Yomim. Testimony concerning gorings on three separate days. This, by the way, parallels Rebbe Yehuda in the Mishnah. And that's what we've written above the line. Vitam, how would an animal be able to regain its tam status and pay only half damages? Shuatinoikes mimashmishin boy vi'enoi noigeach, divrei Rabbi Yossi. That children could pet the animal, could handle the animal, and it does not gore. Now that standard for tam actually matches Rebbe Meir in the Mishnah. So that what as this source says, dear Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yossi is defining muad by adopting Rebbe Yehuda's standard, and Rebbe Yossi is defining tam by adopting Rebbe Meir's standard. We continue. Rabbi Shimon Oimer Muad Kol Sha'idu Bo Shalosh Pomim. Any animal concerning whom there was testimony that it gored three times, even if it happens to be on one day, will become a Muad. That parallels Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah. In other words, Rabbi Shimon is adopting Rabbi Meir's standard for Muad. We saw Rabbi Yossi adopting Rabbi Meir's standard for Tam. Here, Rabbi Shimon adopts Rabbi Meir's standard for Muad. V'lo amru shlosha yamim, the mention of 3 days, elo lechazora bilvad, that has relevance only with regard to it becoming a tam, that 3 days went by and it did not gore, though on those 3 days it saw fellow oxen, but it did not gore. That shows us that it's now regained its original tam status. In establishing or citing that standard, we see Rabbi Shimon is following Rabbi Yehuda that we saw in the Mishnah. So we have two Tanoim, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, with their respective approaches to tam and muad. We can call them, each one is a hybrid Shita, hybrid opinion, combining the opinions or citing the opinions of both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Oma Rav Nachman, Oma Rav Ado Barava. Halocha ki Rabbi Yehuda b'muad. Sh'Rabbi Yossi Moidolo. And we're going to be using this double underline to highlight Rabbi Yossi's name, and you'll see the value in this later in the Gemara. But Rav Nachman says that we establish the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda with regard to muad, namely gorings on 3 separate days, not 3 on 1 day. If there are gorings on 3 separate days, so that would make the animal into a muad. And why does Rav Nachman say that we'll follow Rabbi Yehuda? Sh'Rabbi Yossi modelo, because Rabbi Yossi in this Brisa, that we saw just a couple lines up, said thusly. He said that an animal becomes a muad if there's testimony concerning gorings on three separate days. V'alochek Rabbi Meir betam. Rav Nachman says we will follow Rabbi Meir's standard in establishing how does an animal regain tam status, namely the children petting the animal. Why is the tinoikes memashmashin the standard to follow, to rule like? Namely, why choose Rebbe Meir? Share Rebbe Yossi modelo. Because that's what Rebbe Yossi said. Rebbe Yossi said muad is dependent on the Rebbe Yehuda standard, and Rebbe Yossi said the tam is dependent on the Rebbe Meir standard. And you can see from this that Rav Nachman had a propensity toward the opinion of Rav Yossi. The Gemara asks, notice a long question, Omar le Rav le Rav Nachman. Rav asks Rav Nachman, whose ruling we just heard, Valema Mor, why don't you say, Halacha k'Rabbi Meir b'muad sh'Rabbi Shimon modelo, will follow the Rabbi Meir standard for establishing muad. Why? Because Rabbi Shimon, who was arguing above with Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon likes the Rabbi Meir approach to muad. Which, of course, would mean that if you have three gorings even on one day, it would become a muad. V'alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'tam. Why not say that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda regarding tam? Sharei Rabbi Shimon modelo. Because Rabbi Shimon likes Rabbi Yehuda's standard for tam. In simple terms, Rava is asking Rav Nachman, why do you follow Rabbi Yossi's approach in establishing your ruling and not that of Rabbi Shimon? Omar Lei, Rav Nachman answers, Anok Rabbi Yossi Sviro Li, I hold like Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Yossi Nimuko Imo. Rashi says, Nimuko Imo, Rashi that we're looking at is the upper third of the page, Tamov Uriosov Imo. Rabbi Yossi, when he issued rulings, when he offered halachic opinions, he offered it along with explanations and proofs, and as a result, his rulings carry more weight than the rulings of others. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.